This lecture by Ronnie Reich was recorded at the Jerusalem Perspective Conference on June 21, 2006. Ronnie Reich is a professor of archaeology at Haifa University. His title is The Recently Discovered Pool of Siloam.
Good morning to you. He exaggerates. Don't do it. I can get addicted to it. Why should we? Good morning. Now I live close, so I came from home to here, and then I'll go to the dig, change into my dirty garments, and continue there. Actually, you could go to the place. Part of it is already open for the public, but we still work there, so part of it is closed because of construction problems, etc. You'll see in a moment that what it involves. But this is maybe the last major discovery that I made by chance, really by chance. It started 2 years ago, and since then we work there. And we will start. The Pool of Siloam, if you would have come 150 years ago, you would have seen such a small pond there, and there is a small pond there at the outlet of the famous Hezekiah tunnel, and we'll see later pictures. And we all the years believed this to be the Pool of Siloam. Well, all the credits, people are very anxious about this, so it's not for you, it's for them. They are not here, but it is important. So, where are we? You have here the map of the old city of Jerusalem, and you can see in blue the spring of Jerusalem on the eastern side of the city of David, of that hill which is outside the old city of David, and the place where the pool that we've seen before in an etching is located, at the lowest, southernmost point of Jerusalem, even of ancient Jerusalem, because the Ottoman city is only inside the old city wall, but Jerusalem of the Second Temple period of the first century Common Era extended up to this line, including the entire area. So we are here at the pool over here. You have it on an air view, seeing from the south to the north, and you can see the Temple Mount on the rear side of the picture with the Dome of the Rock. You can see the hill which we identify with the biblical city of David, the Kidron Valley on the eastern side, and what we call the Central Valley or the Tyropoeon Valley, as the contemporary historian of the Second Temple period, Josephus Flavius, called it. This is the ancient hill of where the city of David is located. If I go just one back, I'll probably get confused in a moment with those two devices. We looked at the picture from this point northwards, right, with the Temple Mount over here. And already Flavius Josephus, in his book, The Jewish War, describes Jerusalem and puts at the southern part of it. He describes this as a full description, a very important one, because it gives most of the main parts of Jerusalem. He speaks of a spring, or at least a source of water, at the southern end of the city, that is at the lower extents down, that is to the south, a place called Siloam. And it is not the spring itself, but this is a place where the water emanates from the ground and enters into a pool. So we have already localized, or he has localized already, the name Siloam at the southernmost end of the city. These are, of course, translations from the Greek for you. And I take you back 2 years ago, when this heavy machinery, this bugger, whatever, almost anything in Israel archaeologically starts with a bulldozer or a bugger or something terrible like this. I mean, all main discoveries. Because this is the very tip, southern tip of the city of David, of that hill. And the municipality of Jerusalem decided to replace a sewage pipe. You can see a damaged one. You can see the damage over here. Everything sank into it and blocked it and whatever. And they have already brought this machinery and asked the Israel Antiquities Authority to send an inspector of antiquities, not me or my partner Eli Shukron, but some other person from the Department of Antiquities who was not at the place the moment that this machine started to work. Was his problem, actually. But with archaeological findings, you cannot be absent or say, I'll come in an hour, because in an hour, this machine can do so much damage to ancient relics which you don't know, which hide here underground, which you suspect that they hide there underground. Anyway, remember this cliff and remember the garden. You see just the fig tree on the edge of it. There's a large garden here. Maybe we should go back to the air view. And we see here the cliff. Can you see it? And you can see that tree that we've seen before and the alley in between. And that machine was standing here trying to make a ditch to put in a main sewer from about here to about here and then to about here. This is history. This is archaeology now, not history. Because Eli happened to be on the spot instead of that lazy inspector. And I think that after... we can go on. This is another view from now from the south to the north. You have now the cliff on the right-hand side and the garden on the left-hand side. And you can see here the damages done and to that sewer. And what also was known is that what we called all the time the surplus channel of the waters emanating there from the spring flowed here in a small channel down to the Kidron. And they already work here, as you can see. And I think this is Eli watching over there, over that device. Yeah, I'll skip a few slides which are not part of this lecture. Anyway, this is the garden at the southernmost part, a very nice garden. Now, today we know why this place is so green. And it's just a view still there. I mean, we will not harm it at any case. Anyway, work started, as you can see, between the garden on one side and between the cliff. You can see the main sewer over here, made in a very strange way. This is probably goes back to Ottoman times, let's say, to the beginning of the 20th century. And this is not a pipe, but somehow a concrete cast. And our dig started here when the first steps were found. Right? You see the first steps? Maybe if you have less light here, you'll see better the picture. Isn't it possible? Maybe. Anyway, steps, well, steps, there's nothing particular in steps made of stone. They can lead to an opening of a private house. They can lead to a gate into a courtyard, whatever. But these steps lead from the garden to the cliff, to no place. So here my partner Eli is taking the hoe and cleaning part of it, and let's see a few shots from the dig. And we stopped, of course, the construction work of the municipality of Jerusalem. This is a nice thing that we have in this respect, a very tough law of antiquities, and we can do it, and we are doing it very enthusiastically without damages paid. I mean, probably damages to the municipality of Jerusalem in a large sum. In fact, we later used that money to our dig. And the pipe, you will see, had to be replaced temporarily. And when you can see that the steps became larger and wider, and of course not resembling anything connected to a private house. So during the dig, and it becomes larger, and now we can see already a few steps and a landing, a few steps and a landing. And already at that time, actually after the first two steps, I realized that we deal with probably a stepped pool. And this already appears on the report of that same day of discovery, and we demanded that we do the dig until we are able to by the budget, etc. Then we extended it to the south and discovered a corner. You can see the corner of a stepped of the tier of steps, isn't it, Beth? I think so. And everything paved in stone or laid in stone, and we had to stop at this section of debris because at this line, exactly at this line, the public area, state domain, ended and private property started, and believe it or not, it belongs to the Greek Orthodox Church in Jerusalem, which is a problem, which is... Anyway, I already suggested that time that we have landed on the pool of Siloam, of the what we call the Second Temple period. I didn't have yet a date for it. And this is very important. Any element that you find, before you study it, you discuss it, its meaning, etc., you have to know its date as exact as possible. So finally, we extended it further, and you can see already here most of what we have today. The garden on one side, belonging to the Greek Orthodox Church, the pipe, damaged pipe, still here on the other side, and what we had of a stepped installation, the bottom of which is somewhere here in the valley. Some other shots of it. By the way, you can see most of it today while walking there. When we went into details, we realized that there were two phases, two constructional phases to this installation. This is important. The later one is that one which is faced in stone. This is just a detailed picture of one corner. But you can see here that in places where the stones are missing, like here, or like here, there are other steps below which are not made of stone. You see here, you can see the blocks, each individual block by itself, whereas here a step is hiding, which is continuous one. This is not one block of stone. This is a step which is actually constructed of small stones and plastered over with a gray plaster. This afternoon in my second lecture, I'll talk about mikvaot, about ritual bath in Jerusalem. This step and this step, and if I would have taken away all the stones, we would have seen that the earlier phase of this pool was constructed in plastered steps, very similar, actually identical, except for the size, but very similar to the mikvaot, which were found abundantly in Jerusalem. And actually, the pool in its original face was made with plastered, lime plaster covering the steps, and with a watertight lime plaster which cover the steps. I'll speak about this thing more in the afternoon. But this at least says that we have here two phases. And the cement is very important, the cement of which these this plaster is made of is a mixture of lime plaster, of debris, of burnt ashes, which give it this grayish color. But the debris inside is very important because we went over it with a metal detector, and occasionally in some places it beeped. And there we simply cut through the steps to extract the coin, because these coins, not many, about 10 of them, were in the debris. When those plasterers made the mixture and they need some earth, some sand or so, just took it from the close vicinity, And this contained stray coins which people lost here and there. The coins are important for the dating value because they have dates on them. We know them. All the coins, no exception, which were found in the cement date to the middle of the first century BC. This is important because this gives us the construction date of the early phase of the pool. Another group of coins, these are not the coins that I was talking about, for those who know on coins of those dates. In another place, we found at several places heaps of destruction. Destroyed stones, destroyed pieces of vessels, pottery, stone, etc. Very typical to a destroyed city. There we found a larger number of coins. Inside you see only five of them out of about 30, maybe more now. All of them, no exception, date to the revolt, the coins minted by those rebels who revolted against Rome, the Jewish rebels of Jerusalem. And as you know, between 66 and 70, common era, Jerusalem was rebelling under siege later and was finally destroyed in the year 70, common era, C. That means that these coins are from the last days of Jerusalem. You can see this coin is the latest one. This is from year 4 of the revolt, which is the year 69, just a few months before the destruction of Jerusalem. And all these coins simply tell us when this pool, and we'll see in a moment a paving, a very large paving to the north of it, went out of use and was covered with destructions from nearby houses, which nobody cared to clear away anymore because there was nobody to do it. Either the Romans killed them, or they fled to the desert, to Masada, or they were taken to captives to Rome, etc., and the place went out of use. This means that the pool started to be neglected. Such a place which brings water all the time, also runoff water from the rains occasionally is silted up, and those people had to clean it probably every year. And at a certain moment, they did not do it because they were not there anymore. And the coins give us the date of the moment when this went out of use. So we have here the date of the pool very precisely stated by those. It's sandwiched between those two groups of coins, between the middle of the first century BC and the year 70 CE, about 100, 120 years or so. This, of course, permits us to say that this pool might be very highly likely, and I think it is, the pool of Siloam, mentioned in the Hebrew Bible, mentioned in the New Testament, especially in the story of the curing of the blind man by Jesus of Nazareth. And I'll come to it a little bit later. Let's see, first of all, a few more things. So the dig continued. We had a very founded date, and this continues. We still find more evidence, and it repeats itself, which is nice, to the dating. You can see here our work, which you will not see anymore today because all this is gone. I think this is the pool, or as much as we can see now. You can go there by yourself. It's open to the public. It's just next to the street. You just step in. We started now, the Israel Antiquities Authority, a project of conserving, because you see, it is lined up with stones. But even so, there are places where stones are missing, there are places where the stones are cracked. This is now a process of conservation started right this week. And from the other side, and believe it or not, I have even a photo when it was full of water. You can see it. Oh, this will come later. Just for the plan, which we have, The garden itself is here. I should have written here, garden. And the cliff is on the other side. And you can see here the plan of the side of the pool. We have only the eastern side and the corner of the northeastern corner and the southeastern corner. And we believe that the entire garden was occupied, or the garden occupies the place where the pool was. It is very large. It's about 50 by 50 meters, which is 150 feet by 150 feet about, which is large. It's the largest pool that we know of. And it is fed by the channel that you can see here in orange, and one feeding place. This is now covered because of the temporary pipe, which is here, which one day will be taken away. If we take use of this photo, more of it, you can see that north here ends the pool, like this. But the entire area here is paved, and we'll see a few pictures later, of the what I can call an esplanade, an open space paved in stone, north of it, and the end of the street which brings the people from the north, that is, from the Temple Mount area, which is about 400 meters away. Just strangely enough, two British archaeologists, Briss and Dickey, in 1898 made here a shaft, Shaft E, which they have excavated, and actually were the first to find. You can see here the name Steps. Nobody cared about it. It's not mentioned by no historian or archaeologist in Jerusalem, and when I checked later, I just re-excavated them. They were actually the first one to find it without knowing what they had. It appears also on one of their sections. They simply had to enlarge the dig as we did. If you would like to visualize what we think the pool was, you can see here the cliff. You can see here, the garden is gone because in those days it was just water. You can see the southern wall of Jerusalem, which is there. Bliss and Dickey found it. You can see it, the wall here in black, crossing the valley, actually also damming the valley. And this water concentration inside, although I doubt that the water were as blue as we can see on this picture. Anyway, you can see the channel coming from there. You can see here the channel. You don't see here the inlet, but it is there. A few steps and a landing, a few steps and a landing. And I already persuaded the Greek Orthodox Patriarch of Jerusalem to come to here. We had a visit and waited patiently until he said, "Why don't you do a few probes here to see if it continues?" I said, "His beatitude, this is your land. You give me permission. I will do it." "Oh, yes, you can do it. You can do it." So... So now I'm looking for the money and for the opportunity and not damaging the trees, etc. Anyway, if you would like to see how it looked like 2,000 years ago when it was full of water, you can see it like this. Now we'll see. You'll say, "How did you do it?" Or let's see another view of it from this side. Remember the steps. Well, we had an episode of heavy rain about 3 months ago or so. In one day, in 24 hours, we had here, I think, about 120 millimeters, of which is about a fifth of the annual amount of rainwater. And in no time it filled. I was not there. I called the photographer, said, I was at Haifa. "You go and take pictures. Take pictures." So it is, of course, brownish, but it looked more or less the same. One day we'll continue. It damaged some parts, but only for the pictures. You can see it full of water. This is the pool of Siloam today. Now, of course, the famous passage in the Gospel of John is known to you, if not an English translation. What is important for me, which is still a problem, is to understand what actually Jesus of Nazareth meant when he said to the blind man after smearing his face with with mud on his eyes, etc., go and wash in the pool of Siloam, no matter what was the term used in Greek. Was it just now clean your face of the mud and inter alia you will also see? Or was it, which I believe, although I have a small problem in it, take a ritual bath in that place? Of course, this will clean your face. This is goes without any problem. But take a ritual bath. Because those people who were inflicted with severe maladies like blindness, like leprosy, or any kind of skin diseases, like any type of venereal diseases, etc., were kept outside of the community, on the sides of the city, not being allowed to enter the city, just as a precaution, medical precaution. And now, if such a man was cured by some mean, he had to go to the priest who checked his situation. And when he was considered cured, he had to perform two things, to take a ritual bath and to bring sacrifice to the temple. And then he could be just a normal, then he was a normal person, could return to the community, to his house, to etc. And this is probably what is meant here. Although we have one small problem, the ritual immersion had to be taken when a person was completely nude, when his entire body came in contact with the water, and I'll speak of it in the afternoon. This is a little bit difficult at such a place, which was made for pilgrims, not for those living in Jerusalem, who had their washing facilities, their ritual baths at home, their cisterns, anything connected with water was supplied in their homes. This was made for the pilgrims, and I cannot see such an action taken when so many people stand around and watch a nude man or a nude woman entering such a place. It could have been done if certain areas in that pool was closed with, let's say, mats or some kind of temporary wooden thing. And we find in the stones many holes inside, in the stone steps, so it is possible. But it's not totally clear. Well, just to remind you. Because the water of the spring of Gihon, which was led through the tunnel into the pool of Siloam, was considered spring water. It was considered higher in degree than normal ritual bath waters, which were rain waters. And these waters were also used for specific functions like libation, like at the Feast of Tabernacles, etc. You can see here the excerpts from the Mishnah, and translated this time from the Hebrew into English. And I think there's another passage. And of course, that you can see that among the six grades of pools of water, actually of concentrations of water, not pools, but I simply copied the translation, the water of a spring are the top degree, whereas the degree six, whereas the waters of a mikveh, which is rainwaters collected by themselves, is only degree number three. We continue to dig. You will see, for those who will be there, that most of our money doesn't go on digging, but on supporting with iron struts, and actually it looks like an excavation in the Iron Age, you know. Anyway, because we want to take advantage of the entire area, which is not private property, as much as we can. And you can see here parts now, different glimpses to this paved esplanade north of the pool. It is very nicely done, and I'll just show you, lead you through for those who will not be on the area. You can see, and on these we found that those collapses and destructions which date when these places went out of use, you can see here these stones are part of the destructions which fell down from the city of David. Anyway, we know today that along the northern side of the pool was probably a colonnade. And we find not quite many drums, column drums. You can see here one, and you'll see a few more in a minute. On one of them, at least, we have Hebrew letters. You can see here the Chet and the Tzadi. These are Mason marks in three lines, which are Mason marks showing the Mason how to put it in the column itself. But this, of course, is another dating device, because only in this period these letters were in use. Later in the Roman time, there were nobody who used Hebrew, let alone Hebrew letters. So we dug down. In one place we found later walls. I don't have the time to enter too much into the details, but you can see the paving already showing below where the meter stick is there. Just another view from the side. And we later removed this wall, and you can see another column drum sticking out. And you can see here the paving as much as we have it. We have now more of it. I cannot every day update my pictures, but you can see a few more column drums, bases, capitals, etc., from the colonnade, which was along the street. And we have the beginning, a stepped beginning of the street. Oh, here you have just another. The pool itself is here. You will get lost in my pictures in orientation, so there's no point to show. But this is the part of the paving where the people gather before entering the pool. Or from this corner starts the stepped street. We've seen already the beginning over there. Where was it? You can see here one step, another column drum, by the way, and of the street which led uphill to the Temple Mount, which we now will, in the next years or so, try to expose a few more meters of it. You can see it now the other way around, and believe it or not, these two, Bliss and Dickey, already made the discovery of part of it, which I'll show you in a moment. Just some other glimpses, and there are even two layers of this paving, as you can see it here, probably reflecting a long time of use. A few more column drums around, reused in later periods, in the Byzantine period. You see, this is not the complete column, but it's a stone reused in a wall, just to save extra cutting of stones. And here a few more of these. So let's sum up what I have here. Well, ignore this. We have here the garden, which is the pool, right? We know today why this particular place is so green, because the earlier phase of the pool is made of plaster, watertight plaster. So any amount of water which runs down into the pool, even today in the winter rains, this place is constantly wet down there. So these things grow without being irrigated. So we have found the pool of the Second Temple period. But there's the pool which existed before, still exists there, you can see, before we have started out, and this is located here. That pool. You see here this very narrow area over here, whereas our pool extends probably on the entire garden. We have only part of it over here. What is then this pool? This is the way as you see it today. Here is the outlet of the water, which comes from the spring through the underground, what is called the tunnel, Hezekiah's tunnel. Good subject for another lecture, not today. Anyway, the water comes out here and enters into a pool. Actually, there was a larger pool here, which Bliss and Dickey have exposed, most of it, with a church built over here. I'll show you their plan in a moment. And there are also a few column drums over here. What is then this pool? Well, we know today, you can see, well, another view of this, you can see here, I mean, that pool, this long and narrow thing, is here, what is marked in dotted lines, long and narrow thing. But actually, Bliss and Dickey have exposed remains of a church, of a Byzantine church from the 5th century Common Era, with remains of colonnades also around this thing. This is not our pool. Our pool is here somewhere, right? Today, I mean, the puzzle is solved. You can see, well, we'll take you just to show you the plan that they have excavated. You see here the apse of the church, and you see part of that narrow pool. You see here the pool, what's written here? Pool. Over here. Today we know exactly, and I'll go back to this picture. Today we know exactly what happened here. This pool with a church is obviously from the Byzantine period. It is known to be that church which was built by the Empress Eudokia when she came to Jerusalem and built that church of Siloam to commemorate the miracle of the healing of the blind man. I can imagine that if our pool would have been exposed, or part of it would have been exposed, they would have known of it and would have simply excavated it, cleared it, and built their church there. But the pool was not seen anymore. There was just a depression in the area, in the valley, just a depression, because the pool was silted up already. It is about 400 years later, between, let's say, the year 70 Common Era, when this pool went out of use, and let's say the middle of the 5th century, when Eudokia was in Jerusalem, a little less than 400 years. If the mud of the rainwater, we've seen the pool filled with muddy, brownish rainwater, actually it's runoff from the sides. If every year leaves behind just only 1 millimeter of silt, then in 500 years or 400 years, you get a few meters covering this pool. So the pool of Siloam, the original pool of Siloam, simply disappeared under the silt. And indeed, the section that you've seen before, the debris section next where the starts, the premises of the Greek Orthodox Church, is nothing but silt and debris. There's no construction in it. So the original pool simply disappeared. And when the Byzantine empress came in the 5th century, they moved those 60, 70 meters more to the north, to the outlet of the waters, and built the church directly there, believing that it took part over there. So we have today actually two pools, one next to the other, rather than one making use of the other, or one building over the other, which is very nice. And because we have access to both of them. And what still remains to be done is, of course, the pool of Shiloach, or Shelach, as it probably was called, which dates back to Old Testament times, to the Iron Age, to the days of the Judean monarchy. We know at least from the book of Nehemiah, which is somewhere in between, that such a pool with such a name, Chomat Brechat HaShelach, the wall of the pool of the Shelach, was there. So I can just tell you that one day when all the problems with sewage, etc., this temporary black plastic pipe will be removed to the other side of the garden, we will have time to make a probe or probes under the stone steps of the pool and see if we can obtain some pottery in the debris which is captured there. And if this debris is, let's say, late Iron Age or Persian period, which are the days of Nehemiah, whether it's 7th century BC or 5th century BC, then we will have the first clues to say This is also the place of the Brichat HaShelach from the original, really original one from the biblical or Old Testament times. So be patient, and of course come again in a few years to check if we have made what. I don't promise. There are so many problems there with what we call, what I call archaeopolitics. You know, but I never believe that I will dig there in let's say, foolish engineer in the municipality of Jerusalem made it possible for me sending such a huge machine, digging too deep, and exposing the first steps of it. Thank you. Thank you.